ready.
Man, this whole society got our women looking at themselves crazy, man. Can you imagine if a dude was walking around talking about he didn't want to wear a pair of khakis because it made his dick look big, man?
For real talk.
You ain't ready for the relationship your grandmother and granddaddy had. You ready to leave your dude if he don't text you back fast enough.
All the time.
And see, that's what's so crazy to me, right? Because you can be against police brutality and not want cops to die. The two ideas ain't mutually exclusive.
Welcome to the Span Report with your host, Mr. Span.
Yo, what's going on, everybody? Welcome to the Span Report Podcast. I'm your host, Mr. Span, and this is episode number 107 of the report. It's been a week, and we back at it, and we got some more stuff to talk about, man. Really eventful week this week, man. Real talk. But before I get into all of that, I'm going to let you guys know how to get in touch with me here at the Span Report Podcast and let your voice be heard. You can hit me up at the hotline at area code 313-288-0485. This area code 313-288-0485. Leave me those voicemail messages, and of course, I'll play those here on the show and respond in kind. You can also email the show here at feedback@thespanreport.com. That's feedback@thespanreport.com. Leave me those emails, and of course, I'll read those emails and reply to you here on the show. You can also hit me up on Twitter and Instagram, man. Follow me on both of those platforms. My name on both is Mr_Span. So follow me there. We can chop it up throughout the week. You can also send me your asshat of the week submissions. Give me somebody to talk shit about. And we got an asshat of the week, man. This one was quite easy. But yeah, man, send me those asshat of the week submissions at asshat, A-S-S-H-A-T, at thespanreport.com, man. Send those asshat of the week submissions, man. Also, give me a 5-star review, man, preferably on iTunes and or Stitcher Radio. Leave those 5-star reviews, man. They really help the show. It doesn't cost you anything, and it gets the word out, man. Let's other people know that this is something that you enjoy and that they could probably enjoy as well. Also, man, you can donate to the show once you go to www.thespanreport.com, and there's a donate tab on thespanreport.com. You can you can set it up to where you can donate once, or you can set it up to where you can donate recurringly. However you feel like donating is very much appreciated, man. Whatever you can give helps with the production of thespanreport.com. So also, because it's thespanreport.com, man, everything's available there. All of the podcasts are available there. Old videos of the podcast are available there. You can vote in the polls at thespanreport.com. You can leave comments on certain posts on thespanreport.com. Like, everything that you need Span Report related is available to you right there at www.thespanreport.com, man. So be sure to go there for all of your Span Report needs, man. Yes indeed. Yeah, man. So it's been a lot of things going on this week, man, and I want to speak to these things, man. Calvin Johnson retired this week, so I'm gonna talk a little bit about that, man. Some shit happened in my hometown of Chicago, Southside Stand Up. That happened last night with Donald Trump. His rally was canceled because of the protests that were going on in Chicago. So I'm gonna talk a bit about that. I'm also gonna talk about the Michigan primaries here that happened over the course of the week. Last Tuesday we had the Michigan primaries. I'm gonna speak a little bit about my experience dealing with that. Also, man, Apple versus the FBI. There's another little wrinkle in that program that I kind of want to speak to. Excuse me, because of as I've stated before, I'm kind of leaning on Apple's side when it comes to this. So there's another wrinkle in this that I kind of wanted to speak to. Also, man, what else do we have here? Oh, Cat Williams. Cat Williams has been having a meltdown sort of a week this week, man. So I'm just going to kind of briefly talk about, well, I don't even know if we can call it briefly, but we're going to talk a little bit about what's going on with Cat Williams later on in the show. And I got some listener feedback to get back to as well, man. So, yeah, man, we got a lot to talk about today. And we're going to get right into this, man. First thing I'm going to talk about is Donald Trump. Donald Trump was supposed to have a rally at the UIC Pavilion in Chicago last night. And it didn't exactly go as well as the Trump would have liked it to go, right? There were protests last night that shut that shit down, right? And you know, some of the protesters, they were, you know, some of the protesters were attributed to Black Lives Matter Chicago chapter. Asada's daughters are also affiliated with some of this protest shutdown. And Bernie Sanders supporters stood up and showed out in the middle of a Trump rally, man. They stood up and held Bernie signs and yelled out Bernie's name in the middle of a Trump rally, man. So, yeah, man, they shut that shit down, right? And one of the things about it, man, is one, I couldn't be prouder. I couldn't be prouder to be from Chicago than I am at this moment, because before any of this happened, right, there was a petition put out to have Donald Trump not have this have this rally in Chicago. I think there was 50,000 names attached to this position, attached to this petition, to keep Donald Trump from having this rally in Chicago. And of course, Donald Trump went through with it anyway, right? Because Donald Trump says, you know, he's used to protesters, whether it's about his buildings, whether about his clothing line that he actually has made in Mexico.
Anna thinks you need a PhD to do your own.
Videos just starting up on their own, crazy shit. But yeah, man, it's like there's this thing with Donald Trump where he's been courting a certain segment of the population to these rallies, and his rallies have been getting increasingly violent. His rallies have been gotten to the point where folks compare them to Klan rallies, so to speak, right? So it was a good thing for me personally. I'm just in my personal investment, me being from Chicago and everything else, very good thing to see that the Trump rally was disrupted, that the Trump rally was shut down, and that happened, right? That happened. But one of the things that I thought was interesting about the fact that the Trump rally was shut down last night was I kept hearing folks talk about whether or not First Amendment had been breached, or whether or not the First Amendment had been that Trump wasn't allowed to have his First Amendment rights, and that the people who wanted to hear Trump were denied their First Amendment rights and all these other things too, right? And it's funny how when you think about the First Amendment, how it's always it's really convenient for a lot of conservative leaning folks to talk about when First Amendment is applicable, right? So take, for instance, what we were talking about, Beyonce and her performance during the Super Bowl, and folks were talking about how they wouldn't watch the Super Bowl. They shut off the Super Bowl during the halftime performance. They didn't like what Beyonce said in her formation video. You got police departments across the country who are saying that they won't even secure the venues in which Beyonce is going to be performing at because of they thought that the message was anti-police. And you think about Beyonce's First Amendment, you know, her First Amendment rights, whether or not she had the right to say it, and she did say it. But the one thing about it is that what we have to understand is that First Amendment allows you to say what you want to say, but it doesn't protect you from the ramifications of what it is that you say. It just doesn't do that. So the ramifications of the speech that Donald Trump has been peddling in over the last year and a half has been one of political incorrectness, one of bigotry, one of racism, one of sexism, one of xenophobia. And so to see this type of reaction, as opposed to saying that this is denying his freedom of speech, no, this is a reaction to the things that Donald Trump is saying. And not only that, protesting is also covered under freedom of speech, just as freedom of religion is covered under freedom of speech. And Donald Trump has spoken repeatedly against Islam, how he doesn't want any Muslims coming into this country, whether or not they're citizens, whether or not they're refugees, whether or not they're visiting. We have to shut this down until we figure out what's going on. No, I mean, we know what's going on. And not only that, not even this week, he said that he believes that Islam hates us. Now, Islam is in and of itself a sentient being that hates American citizens, right? And so what we are seeing with Donald Trump is the fact that his speech has ratcheted up the rhetoric so much, and it has ratcheted up the passions in folks so much, that he doesn't necessarily understand what it is that's going on, right? And not only that, not even just Donald Trump. I believe he does understand what's going on. I believe it's his supporters who don't necessarily understand what's going on, just as passionately as they feel that Donald Trump speaks their mind, and he isn't beholden to anyone. He can say what I'm thinking and everything else. Okay, everything that he's saying that you may be thinking may not necessarily be the correct thing. Even if he has the courage to say it and you don't, that doesn't necessarily make what he's saying the right thing. And so, yeah, man, to see that kind of speech being shut down, man, to see that kind of rally being shut down in Chicago, man, in Chicago, I think it was very important that it happened in Chicago. I really do, because one, you know, there was, again, there was the 50,000 name petition to keep him from having it, and he decided to ignore it. But then two, Chicago has a really strong Democratic base, and that kind of shit just wouldn't necessarily fly there, especially dealing with the kind of the kind of protest culture that is in Chicago, right? We're talking about the place where the Black Panthers were. You're talking about a place where Fred Hampton was from and was gunned down by the Chicago police. You're also talking about a citizenry that has been dealing with Rahm Emanuel and protesting him and Anita Alvarez and have been protesting her, especially dealing with the Laquan McDonald case. So you have a fed up set of folks in Chicago, man. Set of folks that are like real, real fed up. Like, I remember one time, at one point I was kind of excited, right? Because I don't live in Chicago anymore. But I remember at one point I was really excited about Chicago having a bid for the Olympics. And then I remember talking to my people, you know, my people back at home, and they were like, man, fuck them Olympics. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, you started looking at how, they were ticketing folks downtown. They have these cameras all over the they have these cameras all over, right? That's kind of surveilling the city, where they not only are supposed to be surveilling crime, but then you got red light cameras too. And I got a red light ticket from one of those cameras in Chicago too. So like there were a lot of things that were happening in Chicago where Chicago was trying to get itself built up for the Olympics, but it was really phasing folks out. It was pushing people out. It was costing people that live there much more money to live there. And a lot of my folks in Chicago was like, y'all, man, nah, fuck them Olympics. We don't give a fuck about them Olympics because of what was going on in the city. So there's a very fed up faction of Chicago that's not going for any of it. And so to see that last night, I was proud of them. I said it last night, man. I said at this night and at this hour, I couldn't be prouder than to be from Chicago right now, man. And so kudos to all of y'all who went out there, shut that shit down, shut that hatred down, didn't give them the venue to spew that nonsense, man. Real talk, man. Shout out to Chicago. Can't wait to come home and dap y'all up, man. Real talk, man. Yeah. And I had to add that, right? Because this wasn't a part of the show until this morning. I had to add that because last night it was going down, right? But yeah, man, outside of that now. Speaking of, we're still on this political bent. There was a Democratic debate that happened in Flint this week. It was Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders. And you know, one of the things that stood out to me the most about this particular debate was the fact that the debate did happen in Flint. There was a previous Republican debate that happened here in Detroit that was also being protested. Like right outside of the Fox Theater, there were hundreds of protesters outside of the Fox Theater protesting that Republican debate as well. But it was odd. There was this juxtaposition, right? Where when I watched that Republican debate, there was one question asked about the Flint water crisis, and they were in Michigan. One question asked about it. One. And they kind of talked about it, and then they went on to another topic. And the substantive difference between that and the Democratic debate, where they were in Flint, and they spent the first 20 minutes of that particular debate speaking specifically to what was going on in Flint. That was one of the things that kind of stood out to me the most, right? That they actually took the time to speak to the issues that were going on, not only in Michigan itself, but specifically to Flint. And they held that debate in Flint. I thought that was important, not only for optics, but not only that, to show whether or not it's pandering or not, that there is some concern there. Right. So I thought that was very important that they had that debate in Flint, that they spoke a substantial amount of time to that particular crisis that's going on there, man. So I thought that was very important. Another thing too, that I thought was very interesting. And this is before the poll results came out and everything else. And I had a conversation with a homie of mine, Big Kev, over at the 90-10 Rule, man. Shout out to him. And Be Honest over there that are doing that show. But I had a conversation with my homie from college, man, Big Kev. And, you know, he's a big time Bernie Sanders fan, right? And I'm not necessarily sold, right? Like, and I'm just like, okay, whatever. You know, I'm not really sold on the whole Bernie Sanders thing. And so one of the things that I thought about was the fact that, you know, and I saw this last night, there was a lot of Bernie Sanders fans at the Trump rally last night. But not only that, like, you see Bernie Sanders and he has these really large rallies in these arenas and everything else. And you started wondering, like, okay, how much of this Bernie Sanders revolution is actually transferring to actual votes, right? Because as much as I see on my timeline about how great Bernie Sanders is and how Bernie Sanders isn't bought by the politicians, Bernie Sanders isn't bought by Wall Street, Bernie Sanders isn't bought by corporate interests, and how much that Bernie Sanders is, how much that Bernie Sanders is so great for black people, because that's another thing too that I think gets lost in the sauce, that there's a contingent of black folks who just ain't trying to be told that this is the best thing for you, and you don't know what's best for you if you don't vote for Bernie Sanders. It's patronizing. It's insulting. And I think a lot of black folks are a lot more politically astute than we're given credit for, right? So when it comes to Bernie Sanders, I really kind of wondered before this debate, like, the large rallies that he has, which can rival Donald Trump's rallies, right? Not in so far as like the rhetoric and the vitriol and everything else, but the amount of people who show up to Bernie Sanders rallies and whatnot, and how those were transferring into votes. Like, because we hadn't seen Bernie Sanders really win a large number of votes, or even carry many of the states. Right now, Hillary Clinton has carried the majority of the states, and she has a really big delegate count lead over Bernie Sanders. Is almost at the point with Bernie Sanders how it was for Hillary Clinton back in 2008 when Barack Obama had the delegate lead and the super delegate lead, and Hillary Clinton really didn't have a way to win the nomination, but she continued on in her campaign. And so you kind of juxtapose that now, and it's like Hillary Clinton is in the Barack Obama position and Bernie Sanders is in the Hillary Clinton position of 2008, right? And so what ended up happening was Bernie Sanders won Michigan, right? I believe Mississippi was also a primary that was happening on the same Tuesday. And Bernie Sanders won Michigan, right? Which was a little bit surprising for a lot of folks, because Hillary Clinton had been leading in the polls here in Michigan, right? And another thing, too, I always used to wonder, like, who are these people calling? Like, because before I actually got a phone call from an actual pollster, I was like, man, who are these people calling? I never got those calls. And I didn't get that call this time. But even if I did, I probably blocked it anyway, because it was a number I didn't recognize, right? So, yeah, man. But Bernie Sanders won Michigan. And his win was touted as historic. Right, it was a historic win, man, a big upset and everything else. Bernie Sanders won Michigan by 2 points. And it was something that I noticed when it came to the coverage of how Bernie Sanders won that, won Michigan, was how it was framed. You know, like, it was a historic win. It was a huge upset. It was something that we never would have thought and everything else. Like, well, hold up. Like, again, you're talking about a heavily Democratic state. Now, of course, outside of Detroit, in Wayne County, some parts of Oakland County, you have a really conservative bent in this state, right? But Michigan has a really large blue collar union based electorate, right? You got the UAW here, you have the AFL-CIO here. I'm actually a member. I'm in an AFL-CIO affiliated union, right? So there's a lot of union votes that go typically towards the Democratic base. But when it came to how Bernie Sanders won Michigan, I thought it was a good win for him. I don't know if it was historic. It was kind of funny to see how it was presented in that way. But yeah, it was interesting to see how it was framed, that Bernie Sanders winning Michigan was so historic, when really he just won he won a state. Now it's time for him to go and try to win Ohio, try to win Illinois. Try to win some of these other states to kind of build up his delegate count. Now, that's not to say that he can't do it, right? And I want to make this clear. I'm not anti-Bernie. You know, that's one of the things that kind of happens when you speak some of the truths that a lot of his supporters may not necessarily want to hear. I'm not anti-Bernie. I don't have any issue with Bernie Sanders whatsoever. To be quite honest with you, I would vote for either Bernie Sanders or Hillary Clinton if they were the nominee in the presidential campaign. Whomever they are, whomever the Democratic nominee this year will be who I vote for this year. I can live with either one of them. On the Republican side, not so much this year. Not so much, right? So there's that, man. There's this attitude when it comes to some Bernie Sanders supporters that, like, if you don't support Bernie Sanders, that you don't know what's right for you. And it's like, that's why y'all aren't connecting the way in which y'all think y'all should be connecting, because you're patronizing to folks. People are a lot more politically astute than you give them credit for, right? And so that kind of leads me into why I voted in the Republican primary this year. Yeah, man. I voted in the Republican primary this year. And part of it is because there's a few different reasons as to why I voted in the Republican primary this year. One, Michigan has an open primary. So I'm an independent voter. I'm not a registered Democrat. I am not a registered Republican. I am an independent voter. And what happened here in Michigan is, you know, it's an open primary. You can vote in either party. And so when I went to my polling place, man, one of the things that kind of caught me off guard was the fact that they announced out loud which ballot that I wanted, right? So when I asked for the Republican ballot, I'm thinking, okay, he'll slide my slip over to the guy who's going to give me the ballot. Now he announced Republican. And so now you got all these people in this polling place, and it wasn't a whole lot of people, but there was a few people behind me. And you know, one of the, you know, like the guy says Republican, and the black people are looking at me like, what the fuck is wrong with this nigga? And the white people are looking at me like, what's this nigga up to? Right? And it was funny because I'm looking at all of these names on a Republican ballot, and I don't like any of them, right? But here's the reason why I decided to vote in the Republican primary here in Michigan. One, I already mentioned it, that I have I can live with either Hillary Clinton or Bernie Sanders. So whomever won the Michigan primary on the Democratic ticket, to me, was kind of a wash, right? I really didn't have any, I don't necessarily have a really big dog in that fight, right? But when it came to the Republican primary, because it was an open primary here in Michigan, I felt like, yo, if I can do anything with my vote, because I'm not really sold on either Hillary or Bernie Sanders, and I'm kind of ambivalent to him. But if I could kind of raise a little ruckus in this Republican primary, then why not? Why not, right? I still got another vote coming up in November. How about I try to use my vote a little bit strategically, right? And if I can kind of use my vote to keep Donald Trump from winning Michigan, then I'll try to do that, right? I'll do that. I mean, Bernie Sanders, Hillary Clinton, there's not much difference between them, as much as some of those who are really passionate about that would like to believe. They're not that different to me, right? A lot of what they're talking about will end up being the same sort of thing. So when it came to that Republican primary, I'm like, yo, I'm going to use my vote disruptively. I'm going to go into this Republican primary, and I'm going to vote for somebody other than Trump in this Republican primary to kind of muddy those waters a little bit, if I could, as much as I could with my vote. Now, I'm not sure. It was funny because I posted this on Facebook, and it was quite a few other people that I know, most of my podcast friends, who also said that they did the same thing in their states. I know Sojo from the Whiskey, Wine, and Moonshine. She said she did the same thing. My man, Scarfinger. He said he did the same thing in Virginia. Who's that? My man Rashani over at Single Simulcast is thinking about doing the same thing in their primary. So, like, there's a lot of folks who were thinking about voting Republican in those primaries to kind of muddy up those waters. And I'm wondering whether or not that kind of attributes to these record numbers that Donald Trump keeps referring to when it talks about the Republican Party and all these votes that they're getting, right? Because we keep hearing all the time about the turnout of the Republican base, or the Republicans are really fired up about coming out and voting for Donald Trump, and he's setting all these records to get all these people to come out and vote, and we've never seen numbers like this. And I think he forgot about 2008 when Barack Obama was running, but yeah, he's like, we never seen numbers like these. These are historic. And I'm wondering how much of that is a lot of Democratic or typically Democratic voters who are coming over not only to not to, to vote in the Republican primary, not to not because they are disillusioned with the Democratic Party, but because they want to cause a ruckus within the Republican Party. And we're seeing a lot of the Republican establishment tear itself apart to keep Donald Trump from becoming its nominee. And my part in that vote was to keep Donald Trump from winning Michigan. I wasn't successful in that, but again, I'm just one vote, right? I am just one vote. But I think a lot of this, especially in states that have open primaries, is about keeping the Republican Party at a flux, keeping the Republican Party infighting, keeping the Republican Party looking like the fools they are right at this moment with Donald Trump being their leading candidate, right? And so I'm wondering how much of that is actually Democratic voters who aren't necessarily disillusioned with the Democratic Party, but really just trying to stir up shit. Like I was with my vote when it came to voting in the Republican primary. Now, yeah, and I know it was a couple people that was asking, well, did you vote for Trump? No, I didn't vote for Trump. I'll tell you, I voted for Kasich, right? Really safe vote. As a matter of fact, I thought John Kasich could have won Michigan. And at first, early on in the results, it was looking like he could have. And then Donald Trump pretty much run away with it. And he won in Wayne County, which is the county that I live in, which I thought was kind of odd. But yeah, man, it was okay. Famous Footwear is emailing me. Good. Yeah, but that's what happened. That's what happened. And that's why I voted Republican, man. So I know I threw a lot of my friends off when they saw that I voted Republican. I know I threw a lot of my family off when I posted that I voted in the Republican primary. But that was my reasoning for voting in that Republican primary. And I'm wondering how often that's actually happening across the country when it comes to the Republican Party and the Democrats who are voting in the Republican primaries, how much of that is involved with these primaries, man. Yeah. But another thing. Now, let me turn to my pocket app here, because there was another story. Oh, here we go. I want to talk about the FBI and Apple, right? This was an article that was written in TheIntercepted.com, and it was one of the things that not only that I've always said from the very beginning out that it was in. I'm rambling now. I've always said from the very beginning that I thought Apple had the upper hand as far as the principle of the argument concerning the FBI and the encryption argument for our phones, for our cell phones, and the information that's locked in those phones and whatnot, right? And so part of it was the fact that, again, I believe in our privacy, and I believe that Apple, as much as I don't necessarily like them as a company, it was odd to see them in the position to where they're actually fighting for that right to privacy when the FBI, who was supposed to be protecting that right to privacy, didn't, right? Or the government, not necessarily the FBI, because the FBI has always kind of peddled in violating the privacy rights of its citizens, especially if they saw those citizens as threats, right? And this is what I found very important, because I was reading The Interceptor this week and I came across this article, and it was talking about the FBI versus Apple debate just got a lot less white, right? And I'll just read from the article a bit here. It says the court fight between Apple and the FBI prompted a slew of letters and legal briefs last week from outside parties, including many tech companies and private groups. But a particularly powerful letter came from the collection of racial justice activists, including Black Lives Matter. The letter focused on the potential civil rights abuses should the FBI gain the power to conscript a technology company into undermining its own user security. It says, only need look at the days of J. Edgar Hoover and wiretapping of the Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. to recognize the FBI has not always respected the right to privacy for groups it did not agree with, wrote the signatories, including arts and music nonprofit Beats, Rhymes, and Relief, the Center for Media Justice, the Gathering for Justice, Justice League NYC, activist and writer Sean King, and the Black Lives Matter co-founder and Black Alliance for Just Immigration Executive Director Opal Tometi. Those tactics haven't ended, they argue. Many of us, as civil rights advocates, have become targets of government surveillance for no reason beyond our advocacy or provision of social services for the underrepresented. And you know what? It really does kind of make you think about that. It really does make you think about that when you talked about how the FBI, J. Edgar Hoover specifically, talked about there not being another Black Messiah after Dr. Martin Luther King, and how they went to undermine Dr. King, and they sent, you know, they surveilled him to the point where they started sending tapes of his sexual trysts with women that were not Coretta Scott King to his wife, where they really tried to get him to commit suicide. They actually spoke to him. Where they sent messages to him to try to convince him to commit suicide, to present himself as he was being a fraud, that he was misrepresenting himself to the people and everything else. Another thing too that was said during this in this article was that I've been reviewing the Apple versus FBI lawsuit and now realize how important it is that Apple wins this lawsuit. DeRay McKesson, Baltimore mayoral candidate and prominent Black Lives Matter organizer, tweeted on February 22nd. When I was arrested in protest, my iPhones were in police custody. They were secure. The police couldn't access my info, he added. If Apple has to create an insecure iPhone iOS app, all of the private data that we store on our phones is at risk. And so you think about those who are out there who take the time out to protest, who put their lives on the line to protest for not only the rights of you, but the rights of themselves and the rights for others, and how this information is being used and how that information can be used against those who stand up against the government and those who fight for the rights of others, and how the government has used certain tactics in order to discredit a lot of civil rights leaders. You think about COINTELPRO, you think about how they infiltrated the Nation of Islam and had Malcolm X killed. You think about how COINTELPRO was used in which to neutralize the Black Panther Party. So the government has shown itself to kind of throw the rules out of the window when it seems when it sees citizens as threats to the status quo. And so for Apple to kind of stand on the side of the citizens and say, hey, hold up, this information is not for your consumption. This information is not for you to use for surveillance purposes in the way in which you would like to use them. It's one of those things, man, where again, it's just another wrinkle in this thing with Apple versus the FBI in this encryption case. And not only that, I think Google, when it comes to Android, a lot of the phones with your a lot of your Android phones, especially if it comes to Android 5.0, which is Android Lollipop and beyond, a lot of those phones are they're not encrypted out of the box. You can opt to encrypt them once you turn on those phones. I believe with Android 6.0, those phones come encrypted right out of the box. But yeah, it's very important. It's very important not only to keep the bad guys out of getting access to your information and being able to use that information, and whether or not that be for identity theft or whatever, to keep that information secure and keep it out of the hands of people who aren't supposed to have it. And not only that, to kind of protect you from government surveillance as well, I believe is the right approach. I believe that is the right thing to do. So yeah, man, that was something that I wanted to kind of follow up on, man. I know I've been talking about it the last few weeks, man, but I think it's important that we kind of pay attention to things like that, man, real talk. But yeah, man, another thing happened. And we're going to talk about Cat Williams this week, man. We're going to talk about him, right? And one of the things that I really want to kind of get across with Cat Williams is I believe everything that's been happening with Cat Williams this week has definitely been a cry for help, right? I really do believe that. I believe that Cat Williams is in a position to where he has no one who can tell him no, no one who can kind of, you know, rein him in, so to speak, and kind of, you know, rein in that all of these erratic behaviors that he's been exhibiting as of late, right? And so it was interesting, man, because I've seen quite a few people talk about Cat Williams as being a target, that the media is spinning this so that Cat Williams is seen as crazy, and that the media is complicit in the downfall of Cat Williams, that there's some, and I've even, like, I really try not to laugh at people when they start talking about the Illuminati, but, man, I've seen folks talk about how the Illuminati is the reason why Cat Williams is dealing with all of the bullshit that he's dealing with right now. You know, like Cat Williams said, you know, they be having gay Hollywood parties, and, you know, he was exposing that, and he was exposing all of these things, man. That's why they coming at the Cat the way that they're doing, right? And so, when I hear stuff like that, I can't do anything but laugh. Not only that, like, Cat Williams himself made a joke, and he was talking about Michael Jackson and all the things that Michael Jackson was going through. And at the time, he was saying, fuck Michael Jackson, right? But he was talking about how when people say things about you, how true those things about you are, especially if it was a sustained sort of commentary being made about you. Here's the joke that Cat Williams said about Whitney Houston back in, I want to say, 2007.
Some of y'all looking at me like, I can't believe you saying that. It's a setup. Fuck a setup. Don't nobody say the same shit about you for 20 goddamn years. What the fuck is you talking about? If a motherfucker call you a crackhead for 20 years, bitch, you are smoking crack. Whitney done smoked her kneecaps off, and we still talk about,
All right. Now, Cat Williams said that about Whitney Houston, and I'm starting to wonder whether or not that can be applicable to himself as well. Now, I don't want to say that Cat Williams is on any other drugs other than the weed that he admits to smoking, right? But I've seen crackheads. I've seen dope fiends. I have some in my family. I know what they look like. Cat Williams looks like one of my uncles right now, right? Looks like one of my uncles right now. And it's amazing how we kind of like, we laugh and we joke about what's going on with Cat Williams. And sometimes we kind of like look away. We, you know, and sometimes, like, I think a lot of it is because we know that sometimes comedians have tortured souls, man. Sometimes comedians go through a lot of shit, and then they turn the bullshit that they're going through into amazing comedy specials or amazing comedy material, you know, and they're able to make us laugh at their pain. I think Kevin Hart did a show called Laugh at My Pain. A lot of the things that they're going through, they're able to present it in a way in which we can all laugh at it. And I don't know, sometimes it's therapeutic for them to do it that way, but it's a way to kind of get some more material. Not saying that Cat Williams is doing this because he wants more material, but what I'm saying is, you know, sometimes, you know, our comedians have gone through a lot of shit, and they've been able to kind of joke about it and make us look at things in certain ways. And so even with that, I'm wondering how much of that joke had anything to do with Cat Williams, right? How much he might have been talking about himself in that moment, right? So I say all that to say this. Cat Williams has been arrested for kidnapping. Cat Williams has been arrested for assault. Cat Williams has been had his home raided this week. A lot of shit. Cat Williams has had, he said he pulled guns on a group of women who wanted to take pictures with him, and he confiscated, or he like stole their phones and shit. There's a lot of shit that's been happening with Cat Williams this week. So I'm on the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Shout out to Atlanta Journal-Constitution. And I'm reading on their website that comedian Micah Cat Williams, who was arrested Tuesday for the second time in recent days after he allegedly threatened to kill his bodyguard, was granted bond Wednesday afternoon. But authorities told Channel 2 Action News Williams violated the condition of his previous bond and won't be leaving jail anytime soon. A Hall County judge set bond at $60,000 and ordered Williams to stay away from the bodyguard and his family as a condition of the bond. He cannot possess weapons, drugs, or alcohol of any kind, the judge said. Attorneys for Williams, 44, said he would surrender his passport without bond while out on bond, but police told Channel 2 they seized 7 weapons and drugs while executing a search warrant Tuesday. The added charge means Williams won't be able to bond out as quickly as he might have thought. Williams and 2 acquaintances allegedly confined and assaulted bodyguard Corey Dixon on February 28th, the day before he was arrested on a separate misdemeanor charge in Hall County. It's our understanding that Mr. Williams was encouraging our victim, Mr. Dixon, to engage in some criminal activity in the Atlanta area, Hall's sheriff spokeswoman Nicole Bell said. One acquaintance, Tatiana Smith, 24, allegedly choked Dixon and assaulted him with a baseball bat. Deputies executed a search warrant of Williams' home Tuesday on Lake Breeze Lane in Gainesville. During the search, investigators found large quantities of marijuana and several firearms. Williams was charged with aggravated assault, terroristic threats, false imprisonment, and felony possession of marijuana. Tatiana Smith was arrested on multiple charges that included aggravated assault, misdemeanor marijuana possession, and possession of the drug Alfazolam. Never heard of that shit. She was not granted bond. The second acquaintance, Lena Smith, 40, was arrested on a charge of felony possession of marijuana. She was also granted a $5,000 bond. Now, that's one incident. That's one incident that happened with Cat Williams this week, right? Another incident that happened with Cat Williams was that he was arrested for punching a pool store employee while he was out on bond, right? So Cat Williams was released from jail on a $5,700 bond after he was arrested for punching a Gainesville pool store employee, according to Channel 2 News. Not long before the attack, Cat Williams stopped by a neighborhood vape shop, according to Channel 2. Customer George Smith told Channel 2 that Williams came into the store looking odd and that he bought about $500 worth of items. Then Williams put down... Wait a second. Hold on. Williams told Smith that he would head next door to mess with them, Smith told Channel 2. Then Williams put down $1,500 on the pool store counter and reacted when the clerk tried to move it. Paul Love, 54, the pool supply store salesman, told Channel 2 it was crazy. Gainesville police officers responded to the assault call around 11:30 a.m. Monday and found Williams outside lying on the ground with his hands behind his back as though he was ready to go to jail. Now, Cat Williams gave his own account of that particular incident. I was trying to get the video for that, but there's a lot of lag on it, and there was a lot of commercials. Oh my God, here comes another damn ad. I hate that. Anyway, and he spoke about the clerk calling him nigga. It was Black History Month, and he did what any black man on Black History Month would do. So not only was it was about Black History Month, and it was about all of us when he assaulted or allegedly assaulted the clerk in that particular store, right? But it kind of goes into a pattern with Cat Williams, where everything is about whether or not he's defending his manhood, he's defending his blackness, and this all these people are racist. It's like, come on, man, how many times can this story be told to where we have to start questioning, like, yo, man, something might not necessarily be right with Cat. How many times can he tell this same story, right? So another incident this week happened. There was a new allegation surfaced Wednesday against embattled comedian Cat Williams, who was arrested Monday on a battery charge in Georgia after a Gainesville store employee told him police punched him during an argument. At a Wednesday afternoon press conference in front of Atlanta police headquarters, attorney Lolitha Hale accused Williams and about 15 members of his entourage and security team of physically attacking and stealing cell phones from five women visiting Atlanta for the weekend. She also took aim at Atlanta police, claiming they failed to adequately investigate the incident. The police should have conducted a thorough investigation, Hale said, as four of the five women stood behind her. They should have retrieved these young ladies' cell phones at the very least. The incident is the second alleged attack involving Williams this week in Georgia. About 11:30 a.m. Monday, he allegedly punched Paul Love, a 54-year-old salesman of Leslie's Pool Supplies, the Atlanta Journal-Constitution previously reported. Williams was booked in the Hall County Jail that afternoon. The new alleged incident began about 2:30 a.m. Sunday when Selena Boston and a group of friends spotted Williams walking near West Petrie and 3rd Streets, according to the Atlanta police. Boston said they approached the comedian, whose real name is Michael Williams, and he agreed to take a photo with them. When one of the women with Boston began filming Williams, he got angry and started fighting them. Boston told police Williams punched her, pointed a gun at the group, and took the women's cell phones at one point. According to the police report, Williams refused Boston's account of what happened. Now, how many times does erratic behavior have to manifest itself within 1 week before we start looking and say, yo, something might be wrong with Cat? Something just might be wrong. And we can't always attribute it to the media hounding Cat Williams or the media. Like, let's get this straight, man. Cat Williams isn't the biggest fucking movie star there is right now, right? He just isn't. Cat Williams erratically, you know, he'll come out with a comedy special. Some are funnier than others. His very first one, Pimp Chronicles, the one that really went, that kind of like made him really big. You know, that was one. You know, some of the other ones weren't necessarily that great. I mean, not only that, I can remember an incident here in Detroit when he was supposedly retiring from comedy, and he had the battle between him and Steve Harvey, and he got into it with some people here in Detroit, and he got smacked up in a club here in Detroit, right? So these things have been happening with Cat Williams for quite a long time. These aren't isolated incidents. There's like a string of incidents happening with Cat Williams. And it's like, yo, when are we going to say something's wrong with this dude? He needs some help, and he's crying out for this help, and nobody's giving it to him, because everybody's like, either one, it's a conspiracy against Cat Williams, and two, everybody thinks this shit is funny, right? We're watching this demise happen in front of our very eyes, and everybody's either laughing or saying ain't shit wrong. And both of those are fucked up approaches to it. Right. So all of those happen in Atlanta. Right. Now, you go back to some other shit that happened over the course of this week. And Cat Williams, because I got some clips that I want to kind of play for you guys. But Cat Williams, you know, for whatever reason, while he was doing a show in Atlanta, took shots at Kevin Hart. Now, another thing that's been going on with comedians as of late, and I don't know, understand why, and I'm trying not to use the term hater much. I really hate that term, right? But I'm starting to notice, like, so many people are starting to come at Kevin Hart. And as much as, like, I enjoy Kevin Hart to a degree, right? I can understand how folks can see Kevin Hart being annoying, Kevin Hart's everywhere and everything else, right? But Cat Williams went out of his way to kind of talk about Kevin Hart being gay and having sacrificed himself for the fame and everything else. And Cat Williams isn't the only one who's made these sort of allegations. I mean, Ari Spears has kind of talked about him. T.K. Kirkland has kind of talked about him. Mike Epps has gone at Kevin Hart. And a lot of it, I believe, is really rooted in jealousy and not being able to garner this sort of support and the sort of fame that Kevin Hart has been able to garner over the last few years. But if you think about it, man, Kevin Hart ain't talking about none of these cats. Kevin Hart is out here doing his movies. He's out here selling his shoes. He's out here doing his foundation. Like, Kevin Hart is doing Kevin Hart while all these other motherfuckers are sitting off to the side taking shots at him. Even if you don't necessarily believe that Kevin Hart is funnier than any of these other guys, Kevin Hart is doing Kevin Hart without even taking the time to acknowledge a lot of this shit, right? So, Cat Williams did this at that comedy show.
And so I've already proven that if the best they got in comedy is Kevin Hart, don't you fool a black man working hard, baby. Even if that nigga's a puppet, it's not his fault. We don't get mad at, come on, get what I'm saying? I don't, just because I'm better than some black dudes don't mean I'm better than no black dudes. I'm saying, if you want to be mad at Kermit the Frog, don't be mad at Kermit the Frog. Be mad at Jim Henson. Don't say fuck Donald Duck when you really mean fuck Walt Disney. So I don't care nothing about what happens to Kevin. I wish him the best. I just know that somebody's hand stuck up that baby. You understand? So I...
Okay. So... he took time out to take the shot at Kevin Hart. And then he later came back and apologized. He had to go on the, I believe it was the Big Tigger show. And he apologized to Kevin Hart. But not before he did this shit.
You're a sucker. The reason I don't do cocaine, Big Tigger, is because I had a tumor in my upper jaw and they had to take it out, and they had to block the whole right of my sinus with a piece of metal. So ever since I got out the Marine Corps, I can only breathe out of one nostril, boy. I get my blood tested every 3 months for the last 15 years. all narcotic tests have come up 0.00%. I'm 44 years old, little Tigger. You look up my rap sheet. I have never had a DUI or a possession of anything, not even the marijuana I do every day. See, when you real, you can tell the truth about anything or anybody. It was the last day of Black History Month. I begged that man not to call me the N-word. He said, this is what you don't understand. I want you to hit me, because I'm sending you to jail, N-word. And I did what a black man should do. I defended myself and my race. And then I laid down and waited for the honorable police so they could deal with criminals, rapists, and robbers like their job is, and not have to rough up an innocent comedian who was attacked by an employee of a store and he had only worked there 5 days. But they'll take the word of any white man. As long as he's bigger and stronger than the black guy, then fine. But if you disrespect my race, you get it. Other black people can't do it. They got jobs. They got people they got to answer to. I answer to no one but God.
All right. So that happened, right? Then he goes on to Big Tigger's radio show and issues an apology for what happened.
It's the hottest dish in the streets. It's what everyone's talking about on Facebook.
Twitters and Facebooks and all that stuff.
It's what everyone's tweeting about.
Twitter stalking, Facebook groupie.
It's time for Big Tigger's trending topics.
Yeah, that's trending topics.
Find out what's trending now with Big Tigger.
Oh, he did not dump me for that.
On V103.
The party's still jumping and my mama ain't home. I got Tigger in the living room getting it on. And we
ain't leaving till 6 in the morning.
So what you want to do?
All right. We can't do that part. What up, Red Grand Souls through the building, too? What up, Red?
Ladies and gentlemen, Red Grand.
Hey.
Okay, man. I'm just trying to get it to a point where they're actually talking about some shit.
Like a real.
DMs in the text.
You thought it was going down, right?
What's
like, my Tinder is.
Can you play that little clip right there? This is my favorite part of it, buddy.
Okay, let's get to.
As egregious as I was when I came at you, I wanted to be as egregious when I came to deliver my apology for that.
Thank you, sir.
And not to overstep, but I also owe a humongous apology to Kevin Hart. And so I wanted you to be the person that got that as well. It doesn't matter how accurate you are. Even Steph Curry on occasion misses a shot. Mm-hmm. Now, he would be delusional if he acted like we didn't just see that he had an air ball, or we didn't just see that he, you know,
made a mistake,
that he shot a brick.
Right.
He would be stupid if he went, no, that went in. No, Steph, it didn't go in. Yeah, all of them go in. No, Steph, all of them don't go in.
Okay.
So I should have. This is what happened. Atlanta means so much to me because of the years prior to Pimp Chronicles and the years after Pimp Chronicles and how consistent Atlanta has been with their love for me to the point that people often think I'm from Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
So when I did a show at Phillips, I kind of lost myself and I didn't do my stand-up performance. I actually did an hour of talking to Atlanta because I love Atlanta and I made a lot of mistakes
okay.
and said a lot of things that just being Cat Williams' head, but I was not talking to the world. I was talking to the city of Atlanta.
Got you.
And I should have never mentioned Kevin Hart's name. That is the reigning king of comedy if you ask for popular consensus. So okay. Now the fact that he's a black man like me and the fact that I attacked him with such vitriol at a time when our country is already divided in every way it could be divided, racially, politically, economically, socially, religiously, like the fact that I, while being on stage pretending to be higher than that, would then stoop down to the same level and try to embarrass Kevin Hart in front of his children and loved ones after all the hard work he's done since the year 2002 is just regrettable on my part. So I humbly apologize to not only Kevin Hart, but Heartbeat Productions, the Plastic Cup Boys, and anybody associated with Kevin Hart. That was a mistake on my part because I don't love Kevin. I love Tori. Tori's a friend of mine.
Okay.
So I might have, it doesn't matter. I don't need an excuse. I'm sorry. for having mentioned Kevin's name at all. Having,
yeah, okay. So there was the apology, right? And another thing that happened in between that was the fact that he challenged Kevin Hart to a basketball game, comedy, $5 million bet. and yeah, that happened. That happened, right? So he issued the apology, right? Sounds good, Cat. Sounds real good. Hopefully things are going to get better, right? Not even after that happened, we get news. Cat Williams is in Philly because, of course, he told Kevin Hart that he was going to be in Philly, and this is where they can have a little battle or showdown, right? Cat Williams is in Philly. He's at a concert, and he sucker punches a guy on stage, right? Sucker punched a dude, and we see it, right? There's video of this, video evidence of this guy sucker punching some dude on stage, right? And they stumped Cat Williams out on the stage, right? Now, I know I've heard Beanie Siegel say that he's not going to have any more shows in Philadelphia. What happened in Philly was fucked up and all these other things, man. But, yo, Cat Williams sucker punched the dude. There's no explaining that. He sucker punched this dude, right? Cat Williams, after sucker punching this guy and after getting stumped out, right after that happened, Cat Williams, again, has to explain himself.
This is Cat Williams. It is the night after the Beanie Siegel show in Philadelphia, after the Cat Williams event at the Lea Forest Center. The word on the street is that after Beanie Siegel's show, the reason Cat Williams is no longer doing comedy is that after Beanie Siegel's show, Cat Williams got his ass whooped.
I'ma tell you what really happened. I heard the same rumors you heard. I heard Cat Williams was at a club on Beanie Siegel's birthday after his show at the Lea Forest Center. I heard after a show at the Lea Forest, they beat Cat Williams' ass at a club, and then they robbed him.
All right, now, there's actual video of you getting your ass whooped, Cat. We've seen it. That's not a rumor. We've seen it. Uh-oh.
Now, Cat Williams at his show at the Lea Forest Center said to the fans, it's getting to the point right now where you can't believe what you see or believe what you hear. So now, just in case you can't believe what you see or what you hear, then I'm gonna ask you, since you're watching this video, to verify that I'm smoking a cigarette, to verify that I'm sitting here in a hat and a hoodie, to verify that I started off talking with a mask on my face, just in case my face looked not like the face of Cat Williams and maybe it was all bloodied and bruised. But I done talked to you now with this face, and you done looked in my eyes, and you done seen that clearly. Ain't no nigga pop me in my motherfucking mouth, cause I'm still talking as reckless as I was talking at this show the prior evening.
All right. Now, part of the reason why your face isn't beat to shit is because they were stumping you on the back of your head. We seen it, Cat. We saw it.
Now let's get to the important parts. If you did rob that nigga, I'm gonna suggest to you that you missed maybe a $75,000 Rolex. If you did rob me, I will let you know that nigga walked in the club with two chains and walked out that bitch with two chains.
All right. We also saw Cat Williams hand over that very same jewelry to someone else before he sucker punched that guy in the middle of that club. So, I mean, like, I get it, man. Like, to some degree, like, there's the save face aspect of it, but at the same time, and it's just another one of those things, man, with Cat Williams, where it's like, yo, this erratic behavior, this crazy fucking shit that's going on with Cat Williams, is like, yo, he's crying out for help. The dude needs help. Somebody needs to get in his corner and put this dude in some type of rehab facility, get him in some sort of counseling. Something's wrong with Cat. Something's wrong with Cat. And I'm getting a little tired of folks saying this either is because he's exposing the truth or they think this shit is funny because this is going to make the next great Cat Williams stand-up special. Nah, man, get this brother some help. Real talk, man. Something's going on with that cat. And I hate actually seeing this shit, you know, kind of go down, man. Like, it, and when I look at Cat Williams, man, like I said, man, I know what a drug addict look like. I have them in my family. Cat Williams looks just like one of my uncles right now. It looks bad, man, at 44. It looks bad. So, yeah, man, this is a cry for help, I believe. This entire week, I believe, has been an immense cry for help. As much as we aren't necessarily paying attention to it, as much as we may be laughing at it, as much as we may just be pointing fingers at it, Cat Williams needs some help, man. Real talk. And hopefully that brother can get it because it's sorely needed, man. Real talk. But yeah, man, enough about Cat Williams, enough about Donald Trump and all this political shit. We got our ass hat of the week.
Yo, we got some hats now, motherfuckers.
Now, of course, I said enough with the political and Trump shit, right? But we can't be have a ass hat of the week this week and not mention this guy. We cannot. So, the ass hat of the week this week is none other than Trump supporter John McGraw. Now, John McGraw, 78-year-old man, Trump supporter, who sucker punched a Trump protester during a rally. I forget exactly what city and state that rally was from. Well, where was that? I believe it may be in Kentucky. But John McGraw sucker punched a dude while he was being escorted out by the police at a Trump rally. Check this out.
At Promised Land Dairy, our special Jersey cows deliver a...
Let's go ahead and mute that while that ad plays. They have not paid for any production or anything on this show. Here we go.
It's a shocking moment as a Trump supporter bullcocks a protester. Boom, an elbow right to the face. Watch from a different angle. The protester never sees it coming. He's wrestled to the ground by deputies. The guy who smacked him goes right back to his seat.
Did you like the event?
You bet I liked it.
Yeah? What'd you like about it?
Knocking the hell out of that big mouth. We don't know who he is, but we know he's not acting like an American.
So he deserved it?
Every bit of it.
What was that?
Yes, he deserved it. The next time we see him, we might have to kill him.
78-year-old John McGraw was later charged with assault.
All right, so John McGraw said the man was not acting like an American. We might have to kill him. He could have been associated with ISIS or anything. and it just kind of goes to speak into the type of people who feel like Donald Trump is a viable presidential candidate. And the fact that anything other than a white evangelical Christian man isn't an American. Yeah, man. John McGraw, you are the Spare Report Ass Hat of the Week.
Yo, we got some hats now, motherfuckers.
And now we go to our champ of the week. Uh-oh, where is it? Where is it? There we go.
The champ is here! 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 The champ is here!
All right. Now, the Span Report champ of the week this week is none other than former Detroit Lions wide receiver, man, Calvin Johnson. Yeah, man. Calvin Johnson called it quits on his NFL career this week. Is probably the greatest, well, outside of Barry Sanders, probably the greatest player the Detroit Lions have ever had. And, of course, I'm a Detroit Lions fan, man. I hate to see Calvin Johnson go, but Calvin Johnson went out on his own terms. Calvin Johnson went out because health was a concern for him. Calvin Johnson had been dealing with injuries the last 3 years, and even despite that, the fact that Calvin Johnson was not really 100% the last 3 years, he still put up numbers like this, man. In 2013, he put up 1,492 yards. In 2014, 1,077 yards. In 2015, 1,214 yards. He grabbed 9 touchdowns in 2015, 8 touchdowns in 2014. In 2013, he grabbed 12 touchdowns, man. That was the last 3 years where he was really kind of hobbled. He had his greatest year in 2012. I believe he set the receiving record for yardage in 2012 with 1,964 reception yards in 2012, man. Really big year. He was a security blanket for Matt Stafford, man. Matt could like pretty much just throw the damn ball up there, and Calvin Johnson could be like triple covered and still get the ball. Really hate to see a player of Calvin Johnson's caliber go. And I know a lot of debate has been made as to whether or not Calvin Johnson is a wide receiver worthy of being in the Hall of Fame. And I believe that he is, not because I'm just a Lions fan, but just when you think about not only the numbers that Calvin Johnson was able to put up, but you start thinking about how Calvin Johnson changed defenses, how defenses had to account for Calvin Johnson at all times, how defenses were sent sometimes to three different defenders over the top to keep Calvin Johnson from breaking a play, and how he opened it up for his counterparts, whether that been Nate Burleson on the other, on the opposite end, or whether that was Golden Tate on the opposite end, whether or not that would have been Brandon Pettigrew, who would drop a ball every now and the fucking again, and whether or not that would be Eric Ebron, who would drop a fucking ball every now and again. But Calvin Johnson really made defenses focus on him, and it kind of cloaked the fact that the, and not necessarily cloaked, because you know my Lions haven't been the greatest team as of late, but where the emphasis on the running game didn't necessarily hold the Lions back to some degree, right? Because we still need a goddamn running back. But yeah, man, Calvin Johnson changed the way wide receivers have been drafted. You're starting to see now, man, much bigger receivers being coveted. You have Alshon Jeffrey and Dez Bryant and what's my man's name? I'm forgetting his name right now. And I hate that I'm forgetting his name right now because he's really fucking good. Never mind. Doesn't matter. Calvin Johnson was always considered one of the top wide receivers in the game, if not the best wide receiver in the game. He was always one of the first people I would look for when I would have my fantasy drafts, man. If somebody else got Calvin Johnson on their team, I was pissed because I always wanted Calvin Johnson on my fantasy team. Calvin Johnson is today the Span Report champ of the week. Yeah, man, real talk. Hate to see Calvin Johnson go, real talk, man. But we've come to the listener feedback portion of the show. And, of course, I got some emails that I need to get to. And, of course, I got a voicemail also. Somebody called and left a voicemail. So I got a voicemail that I need to get to as well. But I'm going to get to the email first. And the first email goes to – this is coming from Carmen. Carmen writes in to say, greetings from Chicago, Mr. Span. I'm Carmen, and I've been listening to your show for about 2 months now. Thank you. Thank you. And I like what I'm hearing so far. Informative and at times funny, but always passionate. And I can definitely appreciate what you bring to the podcast space. I had a few questions that I needed to ask you though. The first question is, are you at all related to Purvis Span, the blues man, who was a longtime DJ in Chicago? And if so, have you ever considered, having a show on WVON here in Chicago? Okay. I am related to Purvis Span. Purvis Span is my grandfather on my mom's side. He's my grandfather's brother. Okay, so yeah, I am related to Purvis Span. I know Purvis Span. And yeah, we are family, right? The second part of that question, though, when you talk about having a show on WVON, no, I haven't considered having a show on WVON, and I haven't talked to any of my family about having a show on WVON. One, I don't live in Chicago anymore, and two, I actually like the autonomy that I get with having my own thing, right? You know, the Span Report is my baby. This is something that I do. This is something that I do once a week. You know, I don't know if I could really do it on 5 day a week kind of basis, but I've never even really thought about it. Another thing too, man, like even though like I grew up in the record and the WVON thing was a part of the family, I never really thought that this would be something that I was doing, right? Like this whole podcast thing, like this kind of came about maybe 5 years ago. Like 5 or 6 years ago, where the bug was actually put in my head to go and do a podcast, right? Or even presented it, presenting my opinions in this way. And shout out to Mr. Gates at the Haterazzi Radio Show for putting that bug in my ear to say that this was something that I could do, right? So, no, I had never really considered, you know, being on WVON. And shout out to WVON. I love my people over there, but no, I hadn't considered it. I had not considered it. The other thing she asks is like the second question is one that you don't have to answer if it seems like I'm prying, but I'm genuinely curious as to what brought forth the rift between yourself and your father and if there's anything that you would have done differently to have had a better relationship with him. Well, I actually kind of spoke about some of the things that were going on between me and my dad on a couple different episodes. The first one I would say would be you can go all the way back into the archives and you can listen to episode 9, Daddy Issues. And that was around, and I know I kind of spoke a little bit about that around, like it was like a Father's Day sort of episode. And, you know, some of the attitudes about fathers and Father's Day and everything else. So I kind of spoke a little bit about my relationship with him there. I know I did another episode. And right now I'm drawing a blank as to which episode it was. I believe it was called The Prodigal Son. I don't know exactly what numbered episode that was, but I spoke about my relationship with my father on that episode after he died and how I dealt with that. But as far as how I would, if I would do anything different as far as our relationship was concerned, I can't say that I would. And the only reason that I would say that is because I believe that I put forth a pretty good effort to try to have a relationship with my dad that was on a more father-son kind of basis, that I actually did put forth that effort and it wasn't reciprocated. So, I don't necessarily think I would do anything different. I mean, at this point, it kind of is what it is, man. I think I'm more gratified by now is that the fact that I do have a relationship with the sisters that I had no relationship with prior to my father passing away. And the only thing that I'm a bit pissed about is the fact that it took my father dying for that to happen. But other than that, no, I can't say that I would do anything different as far as how I had that relationship with Floyd. And you're not prying. This is something that I've spoken to quite often. So the last question I have is with your talk of hoteps and Bill Cosby and talk of sexual assault and consent, do you worry that your show may not connect with other black men because it may come across as if you're attacking them? That's all the questions that I have. I really look forward to hearing your response. Thank you. Well, thank you for writing in, Carmen. As far as like my talk of hoteps and like black men and things like that, and if I worry about it, no, I can't worry about it. And I don't worry about it. And part of the reason why I don't is because I do the show for the people who fuck with me, pretty much. I do this show for the people who fuck with me. Like if you listen to my show and as a black man, like this is just to brothers or whatever, but if you're listening to my show and you think that I am coming at brothers coming at brothers sideways, or if I'm coming at or if I'm not giving brothers the benefit of the doubt, like you have to understand I am also one of you. You see what I'm saying? Like, and there was also a point in time where I thought just like a lot of you. And over the course of the time that I've been doing this show, yeah, I'm pretty sure that some brothers may have dropped off and not necessarily want to listen anymore because I've evolved in some of the ways that I think about things. But I don't necessarily believe that if that me speaking on these things automatically turns brothers off. I really want brothers to kind of think about some of the things that we, some of the things that we do, some of the ideas that we promote. I really want brothers to think about it. And so that's why I believe it's important that even if sometimes I believe it's important to kind of listen to alternative voices, right? Because everybody that I listen to, especially like even on the podcast space, like there's a lot of people that I listen to that I don't agree with shit they saying. I don't agree with nothing that they're saying, but it's also, it kind of gives me a bit of insight as to how they think and why they came to the conclusions that they did. So I'm not afraid to listen to somebody that I don't necessarily agree with. And I do it regularly, quite often, because not only am I seeing some bullshit and I can point the bullshit out, but I may take in something that I didn't necessarily think about at one particular point in time, right? It may give me an alternative perspective that I hadn't thought about and may have some legitimacy. So what I would hope is that when brothers listen to the Spam Report is that they would kind of think about some of the things that they, you know, some of the things that I talk about in much the same way that I think about some of the things the other podcasts or other shows, other, you know, TV shows, talk shows or whatever. I would hope that they would really think about what it is that I'm saying, because at the end of the day, I do this show not only to give my opinion on things, but I do this show for the people who fuck with me. And so the people who fuck with me, they get it. They get that it's not coming from a malicious place, and they get it that these are the things that I say on this mic are things that I really do believe, and I'm not telling you anything that I don't really believe. And so, yeah, man, there's that. But no, I can't worry about that. I can't worry about that at all. If I worried about that, then I couldn't do this show, and we can't have that, right? Yeah, but thank you so much, Carmen, for writing into the show, and I do hope to hear from you again, Sister Real Talk. I got another email here, and this email here is from Reggie, and Reggie writes in to say, hey, Span, really quick, I just wanted to know what you thought of the fact that Aisha Curry is trending again. See? Quick. Thanks for the shows, my good man. All right, Reggie. Well, here's the thing, man. I saw that Aisha Curry was trending this week, and a lot of it was like, I think, here's the thing, man, when it comes to Aisha Curry, I think what ends up happening with her is that she has unwittingly become the face of a lot of Hotep Logic, right? She has unwittingly become the face of a lot of Hotep Logic. I don't think that Aisha Curry wants to be the face of anti-feminism and the ways in which a lot of brothers have been saying that she is, right? I remember there was an article that just came out this week about Aisha Curry is a threat to feminism. And I don't believe that Aisha Curry even wants to have that title. I believe that that's something that other people have kind of thrust upon her. Now, I do remember that whole thing about Aisha Curry, you know, when she talked about, you know, how folks were dressing and, you know, the dress being for someone who's important and everyone and everything else. But I believe, and even in that time, she spoke about, yo, that's just my opinion. I'm not trying to, you know, project this upon everybody else and everything else, but it was already out there. It was for public consumption, and people kind of took it and they ran with it, right? As much as what she may have said was problematic, even she didn't want what she said to be used against other women. And what's ended up happening is there's a lot of dudes who's sitting around and they're using Aisha Curry as a wedge between other women. Like they're promoting Aisha Curry against the idea of these other women. Right. And so they'll say things like, you know, Aisha Curry is against all this hoism and all these other things. And Aisha Curry, she gets it. Aisha Curry stands by her man. Aisha Curry does this and Aisha Curry does that. And like, yeah, okay. There's a lot of women who also do these things and you're not necessarily recognizing them. Right. So there's this idea when it comes to Aisha Curry that she is the gold standard of womanhood for a lot of these dudes, right? But Aisha Curry doesn't want that. I just simply don't believe that Aisha Curry wants that kind of acknowledgement. I don't believe that she wants that kind of attention. I believe that Aisha Curry is just simply being who the fuck she is for her husband, and that's it. And all these other dudes are taking her and using her for everything else. Who the fuck is that ringing my doorbell right now? Okay, so there's that. Yeah, I can't get up and answer that door. If somebody, like, or whatever. But they just totally threw off my train of thought with that damn buzz. And I ain't expecting nobody. So, so yeah, they'll be standing out there. Hold up. No, they won't. Hold up. My apologies, people. Come on, Tyrone. Chill out. Hey, chill out. All right. Yeah, I'm going to have to edit all of this shit out. My dog's barking. The doorbell is ringing. All this shit's happening. Hey, Tyrone, chill out, man. Hey, chill out. All right. Now, yeah, man, I don't believe that Aisha Curry wants that kind of attention. I think that's what I was talking about. I don't believe that she wants that kind of attention. And I believe a lot of dudes are just kind of using Aisha Curry to kind of back up all of this. These anti-feminism attitudes that they already have, man, real talk. But thank you for writing in, Reggie. But I would say again, like, I want to hear from you again, but then you wrote in again. And Reggie wrote in again to say, I almost forgot, Span. It was another thing I wanted to ask you. I know you're a bit of an Android enthusiast, and I was wondering if you were going to cop that new Samsung Galaxy S7. That phone looks like a beast, especially the Edge variant. I will not be getting the Galaxy S7 Edge, man. And part of the reason why is because I own a Galaxy X6 Plus Edge, right? Galaxy S6 Edge Plus. That's what it is, right? It's a whole mouthful. I own that phone, right? And of course, like you said, I am an Android. I'm a bit of an Android enthusiast. One of the things that's really pissing me off with Samsung right now is the fact that the Android 6.0 Marshmallow update has been available since October, and here we are in March and I still ain't got it, right? And I used to be one of those guys who was really big on like just saying fuck it and rooting my phone and grabbing the ROM and putting the ROM on there, but I don't want to have to do that no more. You know what I mean? Like, I just don't want to have to fucking do that no more. And I'm really irritated at the fact that Samsung, again, has come out with just another fucking phone with the update that I need on it instead of just updating the phone that I already have. So I'm actually thinking of right now, I still have my Nexus 6. I still have my Nexus 5. I'm actually thinking about just going ahead, putting the Marshmallow update on my Nexus 6 and kind of toying with the Android N update on my Nexus 5. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm actually thinking about that. And, like, I want to give this fucking Samsung phone back to T-Mobile. I really do. And I talked to them yesterday, and they said I wouldn't be able to do it. So, yeah, man. No, I'm not doing that. I will not be getting a Galaxy S7 Edge because of that, man. And it was one of those things with Samsung where I stopped kind of fucking with Samsung specifically for this reason. And 4 years later, they're still doing the same bullshit. So, nah, man, I will not be getting that Galaxy S7 Edge. But, you know, for those of you who don't care so much about those updates as much as I would, you know, because I'm a kind of a nerd that way, go ahead and get it, man. I hear it's a really great phone. He also writes in to say, also, do you think the iPhone will ever come out with an Edge-like screen on it? Okay, I'm really done this time. Thanks. I don't know. It'll be some years if we ever see that, right? Because I remember for a long time, iPhone or Apple, they kind of mocked the idea of the big screen phones, and they kept their phone size at about 4 inches, and they mocked that. Now they have the iPhone Plus, models of their phones now. And so I believe they've kind of gone with where the smart money is at. And like, people were buying larger screen phones. Like, the larger screen phones have sort of become a thing after that first Galaxy Note. So they've become a thing. I don't necessarily know if whether or not the iPhone will come up with an Edge screen, because the Edge, as much as it makes the phone look good, it doesn't really have as much functionality. You know what I mean? It doesn't really bring a whole hell of a lot of functionality to the phone. I very seldom use the Edge apps that they do have for my phone. So it looks nice, but I don't know if Apple will actually go ahead and just start, you know, just putting edges on their phone, or like, you know, the edge-to-edge screen, or because what it really does, it just makes it look as if the phone doesn't have a bezel on the side, right? And so it looks like it's an endless screen on both sides. But if Apple does do it, then they'll have to care, you know, they'll have to hear the endless Android fanboys talking about how Apple stole yet another feature from an Android phone, kind of like they stole the iPhone design from the HTC One M8. So there's that. But yeah, man, No, I don't know if they'll do it. You know, that's to remain to be seen. I don't know if they'll do it, but it'll be interesting to see if they do, man. But again, thank you, Reggie, for writing in. And of course, I do hope to hear from you again soon, brother. Real talk. But yeah, man, I got an email. I mean, not an email. I got a voicemail this week. Someone called the voicemail line. It's area code 313-288-0485. And I'm going to play that voicemail here now so we can respond to it. Here we go. Uh-oh, come on.
Listen.
What's going on with this?
Man, what's up, man? Hey, man, I've been listening to you guys' show for about 2-3 months now, and I just like to say, like what I hear, man, you guys seem like you're real woke. But I'm a 50-year-old shirtless guy living in the state of Washington.
Okay.
I've been hearing this term lately, and I was wondering if you could clear it up or give me the meaning of it. It's called hotep or hotepping. Sounds very interesting. I don't know if that's a negative or if it's a positive. But if you can give me your take on it, I appreciate it. All right, bro. One love.
All right, man. Thank you for so much for calling in, man. You know what? This is actually a term that has kind of evolved in its meaning. And this is, and as is used lately, hotep or being a hotep or hotepping is actually, is used in a negative slant, right? It's usually used to kind of talk about people in a negative way. And much the same way that like we would talk about, I remember bougie. Like if you were a bougie black person, that was used in a negative slant, right? Like, so you felt like you were above other black people because you had these things, right? So you were in a much higher position socially and financially than other black people. Then you started to act as if you were better than them. Then you were labeled a bougie black person, right? So when it comes to hotep, like when what tends to happen is like, we talk about people being hoteps because there's like this hyper, there's a sense of hyper-Africanism, if that's even a word, right? Or even just being hyper-black, if that's even a word, right? And so it, I believe is a lot of it is stemming from being so black to the point of being ridiculous, right? Being so black that it boils down to being ridiculous. And so like a lot of what people would call hotep or hotep logic kind of stems from like having beliefs in like these really vast conspiracy theories aimed towards a black man, right? And we saw a lot of this when we talked about Bill Cosby being the reason that Bill Cosby is going through all this shit is because Bill Cosby wanted to buy NBC. It's like, no, Bill Cosby is going through all this bullshit because Bill Cosby has had a penchant of finding himself in a position to where he was using drugs on women to have sex with them or to have sexual contact with them. And this is something that Bill Cosby has admitted to. But what a lot of hoteps will say is like, yo, Bill Cosby is going through this shit because Bill Cosby is black, these women are white, and he was trying to buy NBC. So that's one example of a guy being a hotep. Another thing about being a hotep is hoteps generally, when they talk about homosexuals, hoteps generally don't necessarily like homosexuals and homosexuality. And they'll talk about, again, the whole conspiracy theory thing, like where there's this campaign to effeminize the black male. And we saw an example of this when Vanity Fair did a picture of Michael B. Jordan and Ryan Coogler. And there was a lot of guys talking about how, they made them look effeminate and that this was another instance of the effeminate black male. Or they talk about black males wearing dresses in comedies or in movies. And they forget the fact that, you know, this also happened with John Leguizamo. They'll have we got a commercial going on right now with, Willem Dafoe. He's doing the iconic Marilyn Monroe pose over the grate with the dress blowing up and things like that. So like they will totally ignore those things. They don't care about those things. But we're talking about this effeminization of black men. So there's that. And they don't necessarily like homosexuals, right? Like they shun homosexuality all the way through. And that's not exclusive to hoteps. But hoteps specifically do not like homosexuality. Another thing, too, is when it comes to respectability politics, right? Hoteps are really worried about how white people look at them, right? Or they're really worried about how white people look at us, right? So take, for instance, a show like Empire, you know, and, you know, you'll have a lot of people who I would deem a hotep who would say, well, this show is a negative representation of black people and we shouldn't have this show on television because it makes us all look bad. It's like, no, it doesn't make us all look bad. I'm not worried about what white people are thinking about this show. If I like this show, it's because I like this show. I don't give a damn about what white people are thinking about this. And the funny thing about it is a lot of hoteps, even though that they would say that they don't care what white people are thinking, their whole reasoning for not liking some shit when it comes to pop culture and things like that is because of the white gaze and how white people are looking at us. And they think that these things represent black people in a negative way. And so they will call black people coons who like it. Right? Black people are coons who like pop culture things. If you like pop culture things and it has a black person who isn't exactly the most perfect black person in the world, they'll label that person a coon. Right? So, like, those terms get thrown back and forth. Coon and hotep get thrown back and forth, right? But they're really strong in their respectability politics. They really care about how we seem or how we're represented to the world at large and how the world at large is looking at us. And I'm one of those people who don't necessarily care what everyone else thinks about black people. I'm going to be me. Damn what they talking about. If they don't like it, they don't like it. Fuck them. That's just what it is. That's being unapologetically black. Hoteps are worried about what white people are doing, and we got to conform to a certain segment of how white people respect us and what they think that how white people are supposed to respect us. Sexism too. Sexism is also associated with a lot of this hotepism, right? When we talk about, we were just talking about Aisha Curry and things like that and how, like, a lot of hoteps, man, they really don't necessarily like the fact that there's a lot of sisters who are basically being autonomous and they have they've exercised their own agency and taken accountability and ownership of who they are as people. They're not worried about whether or not they fit a certain role in the black family, right? You hear about the destruction of the black family a lot when it comes to a lot of hotels, man. It's the destruction of the black family. These feminists, they're destroying the black families. Like, nah, man, these women are being who they are and they're not worried about fitting your narrow view of what womanhood is supposed to be. So you'll see that. You'll see sexism. You'll see homophobia. You'll see respectability politics. You'll see adherence to all of these conspiracy theories, man. There's so many different aspects to it. And honestly, man, you'll see a whole, you it's like one of those things, it's like, oh, it's almost a given. Like, you'll know a hotep when you see a hotep. You'll know a hotep if you see a hotep. Another thing too, I want to add this too. Like, when it comes to like common sense, a hotep will go against all forms of logic and common sense when it comes to the defense of, say, for instance, black men, right, in this system of white supremacy that we're living under. A hotep will suspend logic to defend brothers, even when that brother could clearly be fucking guilty, right? Take, for instance, Bill Cosby or O.J. Simpson, where you'll have evidence to where this person has even admitted to certain things, or this person has even the preponderance of the evidence suggests that this person is guilty of certain things. And there are a lot of brothers who just out of, you know, to a large degree, out of racial solidarity, feel as if, no matter what the evidence says, that brother didn't do it. It was a conspiracy to make this brother look like he did it. And then you coons is falling for it, right? And that happens a lot with hoteps. So I know I just said a whole hell of a lot. I know I just said a whole hell of a lot. But when it comes to hoteps, man, there's a lot that goes with them. And I do believe that you will notice hotep behavior when you see it. But yeah, I think I might have over-explained what it means to be a hotep, man. Hopefully you ain't a hotep, brother. And I appreciate you listening to this show. I really do appreciate you listening to the show, man. I didn't catch your name, but I heard you said you was listening to from Washington. Thank you so much for listening to the Spare Report, man. I hope I answered your question as thoroughly and as eloquently as possible. I hope I did. If you got any more questions, man, or if I didn't explain it as to an understandable point, go ahead and hit the hotline, man. Call me right back and we can talk about it again, man. But yeah, thank you so much for calling. I hope to hear from you again soon, man. Real talk. But it's time for me to get out of here, folks. Time for me to get out. But before I get out of here, I got to let you guys know how to get in touch with me here at the Spirit Report. Let your voice be heard, man. You can hit me up at the hotline at area code 313-288-0485. It's area code 313-288-0485. Leave me those voicemail messages. I'll play them here on the show and of course, respond in kind. You can also email the show at feedback@thespanreport.com. That's feedback@thespanreport.com. Leave me those voicemail messages. I'll play them here on the show and respond. You can also hit me up on Twitter and Instagram. My name on both platforms is Mr_Span. Follow me there and we can chop it up throughout the week. Hit me up with your Ass Hat of the Week submissions. Send those to asshat@thespanreport.com. You can leave me a review, 5 stars preferably, on iTunes and on Stitcher Radio. I really hope that you guys would take the time to do that. It really helps the show grow. Also, subscribe to the show here on Spreecast, man. You can watch the shows live on Spreecast every Saturday afternoon, man. So check me out. Watch the show live. Participate in the chat room. Ask me questions in the chat room. All of that happens on Spreecast.com. So you can check out the Span Report there. Subscribe to the show there. And for all of your Span Report needs, man, go to www.thespanreport.com. All of the podcasts are available there. Poll questions are available there. You can vote in the polls, leave comments. Everything is at thespanreport.com, man. Real talk. But, yeah, man, I got to get out of here. Got some things to do. But until next time, fam, peace.